Blog Talk Radio.
Combat sports news, just because there's so much good stuff out there.
I want to start off the show before you start off the show with a very, very, very special visitor tonight. I just want to say hi. So I'm going to turn the phone over and go rock and roll. You want me to say something funny?
I don't know. I don't have anything to say.
She's actually speechless. I have a guest over tonight who's actually speechless. I just say how the Tornado is the best place of all time.
Oh, he is the best host, and he's the most handsome one,
so. Yeah, we can tell these people have been drinking tonight.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
So, yeah, let's start off with your political stuff.
But anyway, my off-topic news, I wanted to just do a mention about one of the biggest news pieces this week was the whole Shirley Sherrod deal with reverse racism, they call it. And I wanted to bring that up because why do they call it reverse racism when it's racism against white people?
Yeah, racism is racist.
When it's racism against...
retards are retards.
And it's like, you know, they don't only just call it that once. You know, they just keep repeating it, like, and it becomes used so often. It's like, I don't understand why people don't understand that the term reverse racism is a racist. But anyway, that whole story was kind of whacked because, you know, it was an example of the media taking things out of context and how that can really, you know, change the course of the whole country's politics and the way they look at things, you know. They were trying to basically have a little fist fight in the press about this whole deal with the Tea Party and racism, and then this is the result of it. They targeted somebody who... you know, just was being honest and telling a good story, and they just didn't listen to the whole thing. They picked on the parts that were pretty abusive and sounded like she was, you know, looking down on these people. That later came out, and the guy that owned the farm and his wife, and this was 24 years ago. The guy is still saying that she did great things for him. So it was kind of amazing to see that everybody with the egg on their face. And you know, being in the news industry and looking in on that was pretty interesting. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, there's a couple other funny stories. Jimmy Johnson is going to be on Survivor. Have you heard this?
Jimmy Johnson, who's Jimmy Johnson? Because it can't be the former Eagles coach because he just passed away last year.
No,
which Jimmy Johnson? The football coach in Dallas that never had his hair messed up?
Yes, that's the one. The guy that does the Extend commercials because. He has quite the name for it, Jimmy Johnson. He's going to be a Survivor contestant, so I guess he must need the money. I mean, he's doing all this stuff, and he's 67 years old, I heard. So I didn't realize that. And there's another interesting sports-related story. There's a guy from the New Jersey Devils who tried to get a 17-year contract. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I heard it. I hate the Devils. I'm glad he didn't get it.
17 years. And,
Hold on, 1 second. I got another special shout-out coming in. Wants to be live on the air. Say something.
That picture, you look ugly.
We're looking at pictures of me all through my years growing up and seeing how immature that I am. So I have one person say I'm handsome, one person say I'm ugly.
Look at that.
They're looking at a picture of me in my college graduation tie, which is looking like a little kid peeing off the, like, peeing in a stream.
That weekend when we were up in Lock Haven with the hot wing for that?
Oh, I know,
that's what it was great.
Oh, fact. Now they're making fun of you the time I lost the fight at the Lock Haven out of Black Eye. Like, you look great that weekend, like, nothing. I got punched. Oh, yeah, thanks. That kind of hurt.
Well,
they're making fun like a punch to my face.
We'll be interviewing three folks from the Maryland Ocean City. Based Cage Time promotion, and we also have Tarvis Sims on in the second hour, who's a professional boxer who just had his first loss, and he's been fighting back from that, and funny, I called him today to make sure he's going to be ready for the interview, and he said, I'm about to spar right now. I said, well, I will let you go, and we'll talk to you later, so we're going to hit him up at about 9:15. And we're going to just quickly run through during the breaks what we can for upcoming fights. I know that the big fight that's making the rounds in the news lately is James Toney versus Randy Couture. But also there was another fight at light heavyweight, I believe. They call it Lyoto Machida versus Rampage Jackson. Which is kind of puzzling because you'd think they'd want to make the Rashad Evans versus Lyoto Machida rematch, but nope, they're going Rampage versus Lyoto, and then perhaps the winner gets the rematch with Rashad, which makes sense. But also, you might be interested in this. It was kind of a fiasco down there in Australia with the betting on the Paul Briggs fight, where he went down after 30 seconds from, like, a jab to the top of the head. Did you hear about this?
I didn't see the fight, but I heard about it. A lot of people said it was an absolute disgrace, the way it went down. It looked like, you know, either he just didn't want to fight or possibly, as you're saying, I mean, something could be a little shady there.
Yeah, from an article that I read, there was a run on what they call punters that were going for the knockout in the first round all of a sudden. So it might have had a lot to do with it. You know? And I guess that's Outback Justice for boxing, I guess. I don't know. That's crazy. But it seems pretty sketchy to me, and, you know, it's also maybe led, I don't know if it's led to the other news surrounding that fight. Danny Green says now that he wants to fight MMA, and he wants to He wants to fight Brock Lesnar, of course. So James Toney is already inspiring. And the guy that we're talking to tonight, Jesse Nicklo, one of the fighters we're talking to tonight, is coming over from boxing with a 22-2-2 boxing record. And one of his only losses is to Fernando Guerrero when he was undefeated. I think he still is. But anyway, it's a pretty impressive record. And, you know, we'll talk to him. We'll drum up the boxing versus MMA debate again, of course, because the promoter that's involved, Jake Smith, I believe his name is. I don't have it right in front of me. But it's Jesse the Beast, Nicklo, Jake Smith, and Kevin Killian that we're going to have on. Kevin Killian is a 1-0 professional MMA fighter, and he's got quite a good amateur record as well. And so that should be interesting. We'll have to bring up that whole debate thing once again. Talk about
there you go.
A little disappointed in the fans of Fight News Unlimited, though. I asked them to post on a SureDog thread, and nobody took the bait. You know, SureDog once gave me 280,000 hits in one day on one of my Zion stories, so I was hoping to, stir that magic up again. But apparently nobody wants to talk about how James Toney's hype is good for MMA, or not.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Do you get mad when I get through my rant every week?
No.
Okay, good. Okay. See, hold on one second. Hey, Double T, here's your shout-out for the week, as I promised. Rich does not get mad when I go on my rants. In fact, I think he kind of enjoys them because they're controversial and they're good for our listenership. Thank you. Thank you, Rich.
Somebody said not to do your rants? Somebody advised you not to be so angry? What happened there? Losing? Jeez. Tony, are you there?
Okay, I'm back. Oh, yeah, see, just as you were saying, hey, you don't get mad when I rant, you hang up on me.
I did hang up on you. You went busy.
Oh.
I don't know how that happened. I'm on the phone with you, and you went busy.
Okay, well, like I was saying, I'm just glad that someone appreciates my rants because they're good for listenership.
Yes, and, I was going to ask you something. I'm glad you mentioned
it. Want to rant more?
Not necessarily rant, but you're one of those guys that you know all the rules of boxing, right? So you can answer
the
question about, what a boxer can't do in the ring that he can do in the cage.
Okay, let's see. One thing a boxer can't do in the ring, he might be able to do in the cage, but it's not confirmed, is he's not allowed to bite a chunk of his opponent's ear off.
Well, you can't do that in the ring or the cage, so.
Yeah.
Unless it's
okay.
Cage in a foreign country that is doing that for fun and amusement, I don't know. But that's crazy. Anyway, my question was, say James Toney, he's working the MMA and all that stuff, you know, like that, but say, we always talk about bringing different styles to MMA, different things to MMA from all kinds of different disciplines, but they don't necessarily do much of that in boxing. And we brought this up with Muhammad Ali. Somebody, I think it was Patrick McGilligan, mentioned that Muhammad Ali's wife taught him some karate, and he learned from that how to nonchalantly chop people in the shoulders without getting called for it. I mean, I don't know if that's legal or not, but my question is a Superman punch, as they call it in MMA, where you leave your feet to throw a punch, is that legal in boxing? Could you get away with doing that in boxing?
Okay, the Superman punch, can you explain that again for me?
That's where the guy jumps in the air, leaps, and I only asked this because I saw it in a boxing match, and it wasn't called. But it's, you know, you jump in the air, and you just throw a punch, like you're Superman, at somebody.
No, you know what's funny? That it's almost like a yes and a no. Technically, is it a legal scoring punch? Probably not. And I could see a referee throwing a warning for it, but I honestly can't tell you why. Because a punch like that, if you're landing with the actual fist part of your fist, the box of the fist, there should be no reason why that would be an illegal punch. And I've seen guys like throw punches from some unorthodox angles. I've been watching Emmanuel Augustus fight. He's actually might have thrown a few Superman punches here and there. So a referee actually might call something like that, but I don't know if it would be illegal. They might call it because it would be maybe unorthodox, and it's something where you see something happen, you say, oh, that's illegal, even though there's nothing in the rule book against it, because you've never seen it before, and you think, oh, because nobody else does it, it's illegal. But no, I don't. To answer your question, I don't know of any rule preventing that from happening. And if you watch some Emmanuel Augustus fights, you may have actually seen it happen.
Yeah, I definitely saw it happen. I think it was an amateur fight that I watched, but that's what brought it into my head. Is that legal?
Well, I'll tell you, he lost his fight a few weeks ago. Have you ever seen when Hank Lundy throws the punch behind the back?
Yeah, there are a lot of different things. And you know, there's some things that MMA fighters don't do a lot that I noticed in an FC Impact fight that kind of got my attention. And was a little boxing based, but they punched the thigh. There's this one guy, he was just punching the guy in the thigh the whole match. It was an old UFC guy. He ruined him by just punching him in the thigh.
I mean, that's a great move. I mean, you get a muscle like that that, you know, spasm out and, you know, tighten up on you, you get a good shot in the thigh, you can't move.
Speaking of FC Impact, our boy Ken Shamrock got ruined, and he's probably out of the game for good.
What happened?
So hard, his knee got rearranged, I think, in the main event fight of that card in Australia.
I didn't even know he was fighting.
Yeah, unfortunately. He got busted for steroids, and he came out and admitted it and, you know, talked about how, you know, it's kind of ridiculous that they want you to be huge, but they don't want you to take steroids. Anyway, he had this fight, and the fans loved him, you know. He even said, you know, I'll keep coming in here and getting beaten up if you still want to see it. So I don't know how much he has left, but he didn't look very well, very good in the performance. And he just got kicked so many times in the legs, there's nothing he could do. He just had too short a reach against the guy. It's kind of embarrassing to watch. But anyway, I think he's all done. I think that'll convince him that it's over. Unless he fights Kimbo Slice. Finally. They were supposed to fight, actually. Anyway. Enough about that. I want to go to the traffic report, since we're already 3 minutes away from when we were supposed to have callers, and we have no callers. So might as well just go through it real quick. I'm going to give you another chance at the big three. Who are the top three countries? And this time it's MNG.
MNG. Okay.
And the same ones are the N and the G that they were last week.
Well, yeah, the NG, I think you said was the Netherlands and Germany.
Norway.
Norway, Netherlands, they count as the same.
You'll never get the M. I'm not worried. It's a new one.
The M, huh? Mm-hmm. Let's see, what country starts with M that we would be popular in?
No,
they have a language associated. Do they have a language associated with it that I might know?
I do believe, yeah, it must be. Because I think I've seen some stuff out on the internet from this country.
Really?
Their flag actually looks like our country's. It's got the star and the red and white stripes on it, but it's not.
Well, the red and white stripes, huh?
It's not quite 50 stars, but it has one big
star. Oh, yeah. Well, Puerto Rico doesn't start with a M. And Great Britain / England / United Kingdom doesn't start with an M. And I think New Zealand has, like, flag with ours, but that obviously starts with an N. So let me think again. Okay. M. Moscow is not a country. That's a city. Okay. What continent is this in?
Well, I don't know if I can say that. I'll give it. No. Asia. Let's put it that way.
It's in Asia.
I don't even know. I should look that up before I say that.
Mongolia?
Oh.
That starts with an M. It's in Asia. The Philippines? That starts with a P.
No, that starts with a P.
I know it starts with a P. But I thought maybe because Manny Pacquiao being so big over the Philippines, you know, we would get a lot of traffic from that country.
Give me another hint. It's in Southeast Asia.
Yep. Gee, thanks. I barely know East, West, North, South Asia. I know what Asia is. Asia. Only countries I know from Asia are China, Japan, Korea, North and South, Mongolia. That's all I know from Asia. I've never been there. And nor do I have any desire to go.
Wow.
And the Philippines.
I want to give a shout-out to all my friends over in Malaysia, because that's where...
Malaysia, oh, okay.
Number one in traffic, and I was wrong. There are red and white stripes, but it's not a star. It's like a moon.
Nice.
And the sun, it's like a crescent-shaped moon, and then, like, the sun is off in the distance between the two.
So most of our traffic's from Malaysia. And they have translate capabilities, right? Like, if they can click translate and read all my rants... in whatever language, Malaysian or whatever they speak.
Borders Thailand, Indonesia, Singapore, and Brunei. It is near the equator and it has a tropical climate.
Nice. I have a lot of snakes over there. I'd never want to go.
I wonder what language. They must speak some kind of Chinese.
You got to speak something Asian.
Right. That's the traffic report. And
you know what?
The numbers.
I'm pissed off.
We had 6,172 hits from Malaysia this month.
Really?
And
Malaysia is our number one listenership.
Well,
Malaysia.
Traffic. We have like 100,000 hits from the U.S. No, a million hits from the U.S. at this point. No, 10,000.
Still pretty good.
A million. Just over a million. 1,011,801 hits from U.S. commercial. And then we have 321,000 hits from network. And unresolved unknown is up to 89,660 people. So a lot of people like to come on our site and not have anybody know about it.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, this actually brings up a good point. I know someone was asking me, is there a way we can set it up that we get... Are we even a penny from every hit we get?
I doubt it.
Someone was telling me, they're like, yeah, you can set up websites, and every hit you get, you get. And I'm like,
you know what does that? It's like sites like MMA Torch and Professional Wrestling Torch. They have these pop-up ads that every story you hit a link on. It'll be a pop-up ad in your face.
Yeah, you know, don't do that to our site, please.
No.
Our listenership will go from like 100,000 a day to like 5 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you go to this one wrestling site, just to look at like, because I'm a big pro wrestling fan, and I would always go on there and see, you know, who was coming back or who was injured or who was going to what organization. And then they'd suddenly, pop-up sites would come up, and then one of them had a virus. Totally screwed my computer up. I want to whip whoever wrote the virus.
Yeah, it's funny. I was doing all this training for this new affiliate program that I'm trying to work with called freeblogfactory.com that I'm doing this blogger contest with. And, you know, these guys are young. They're entrepreneurs. They've all made money in their 20s, you know, and they all got together to do this, but I think they kind of jumped into it too early, so they're a little flustered with trying to get all this work done for what they promised. You know, they thought it'd be a lot easier, obviously. So now, you know, I'm doing all this training and stuff and watching all their videos, and they got these 40-minute videos that are in, like, huge high definition. And, you know, I get through half of it, and my computer crashes or the application crashes. Something happens, you know. And the other night, I get on one, and I get the blue screen virus. And it's the closest I ever came to losing my computer on the blue screen virus.
And oh, the blue screen of death?
The blue screen of death, yes. And the trick that a lot of people don't know on how to avoid that virus is to immediately unplug your computer as fast as possible. As soon as you see that countdown start. And I was so close that it gave me like a little bit of an error message when I started it, but it was fine. Thank God. But I was, because of the ankle, I had to run around like and take my time a little bit. And it almost lost my computer. So those guys really pissed me off because they still don't have the blog ready for my first customer that signed up for this program. You know, and it's like an affiliate program. And it's Dennis. It's the first guy. And speaking of our intro song, Third World, the blog is going to be Third World America, all spelled out, third as in THIRD, worldamerica.info. So in a few days, whenever they get to it, you know, they signed up like 6 weeks ago, you'll be able to see what they've done and created with his $500 worth of blog. That's what they claim it is, so. I'm excited to see it if it's worth selling, and I'm going to go to the limit with it. I think these guys are smart. They got good heads on their shoulders, but they just don't have the right team together and all the kinks out yet. So I'm just going to wait for them to do that before I really start promoting everything and working on this. But I've given people 6 months to develop their blogs here through this company. So that's plenty of time to get started and, you know, see the system, what it has to offer, and get used to it, and then, you know, start doing your thing. And, you know, we're going to give you all kinds of guidance and help you out and you know, give you some one-on-one training if you follow through with that program. So look that up on our site. You know, I haven't been promoting it, but it's not because I don't believe in it. I don't want to, you know, oversell it before it's ready to be sold. I don't want to give them any more headaches than they need either. You know, they need to get what they got on their plate off of it before they get new shit on their plate. So I hope it just helps them as well. But anyway, back to the show. I feel like I've been digressing. We have 3 minutes here before we have to get these first guests on here and have our free-for-all. So I'm just looking down the list of fights here, and I don't see anything like really jumping out at me. I don't know. What do you know about upcoming boxing matches?
What's this weekend? 24th? I don't know. What do you got going on box track, man? What did we have last weekend? Well, surprisingly, there was a pay-per-view fight last weekend that obviously I was not going to order. David Till and Monty Barrett, they thought they would draw. And they said Barrett was the first man to knock Till down in 60-some-plus fights. So you got a guy like David Till and stood up to the bombs of Ike Abayabuchi and Lennox Lewis and Akeem Hoffman. What?
That was a very controversial decision, from what I read.
What did you think won?
I didn't watch it, so I can't say.
Well, who do they think won?
Who do they think won? They think Monty Barrett might have stole it, but Tua was definitely doing well enough to get a win. But
they said Barrett actually was the first man in history to knock Tua down in 50-some fights.
Yeah, Barrett, you know, really thinks he's super screwed in the whole thing. He might be right. You know. But Tua didn't really impress anybody, so it's going to be hard for him to get another big fight after that.
Well, that's the thing. Tua's a great puncher, but he doesn't have his hand feeling at the time. He'll come in there looking for the perfect shot, and he's like a heavyweight version of Rocky Juarez. Well, I love Rocky Juarez, but Juarez looks too much for the perfect shot and doesn't let his hands go sometimes.
Koki Kameda is fighting this weekend in Osaka, Japan on Sunday. fighting Cecilio Santos, 24-17 with 14 knockouts, and Kamita's 22-1 with 14 knockouts at super flyweight. Let's see. We have Beboot the Beast Shumanov in action this weekend, fighting a guy that sort of looks like a mismatch of the week. Guy's 22-0, 14 knockouts. His name is Vyacheslav Uzelkov. They're fighting in California. Beboot Shumanov and Vyacheslav Uzelkov are fighting in Moscow or anywhere in Europe, Kazakhstan. They're fighting in Livermore, California at the Tachi Palace Hotel and Casino. And it's for the WBA World Light Heavyweight title. And if that wasn't enough, it's for the International Boxing Association, the heavyweight title, too. Also on that card is a pretty interesting fight between, looks like the Vargas brothers have two fights on here. We got Gay Rat, it's the most horrible name for a boxer, I think. Gay Rat Amadov, 14-0 with 9 knockouts, 1 draw, fighting Dallas Vargas, who's 22-4 with 16 knockouts. And Rico Ramos, that's a light heavyweight, too. Rico Ramos is 16-0 with 9 knockouts, fighting, I don't even know how to say the first name, but another Vargas in Cuauhtemoc or something like that. 15-3 is the other Vargas with 10 knockouts and 1 draw, and that's for the WBO NABO Youth Super Bantamweight Cup. Really isn't all that much going on for World Championship Boxing this week. At least nothing blockbuster. So what we'll do is we'll get to the MMA fights a little bit later. There's usually a pretty big list of them. But oh, here's one. In St. Louis, Missouri on Saturday, we have a pretty interesting heavyweight matchup between Chauncey Weller, 42-5 with 14 knockouts, 5 draws, and Galen Brown, who's 33-14, 20 knockouts. And that's in at the pageant, St. Louis, Missouri. It's a heavyweight pageant. I wonder why we don't have an American heavyweight champion. They call it a pageant, two heavyweights fight. I don't know, maybe that's just the name of the venue. That's it. Until next week. It's a slow boxing week.
Hey, what's up?
Later, monkeys. I'll see you Saturday.
Had to get some shout-outs. People leaving.
Okay. What we're going to do first, we are going to find it.
You better call somebody.
We've got like 3 guys going on at this time?
Yes, we do.
Nice.
I can find one number where I have at least one. Yeah. We need some dialing ranting, Tony. There? Did you lose you?
What?
What? Who? Jake Smith. Get him on the phone. Need some ranting music. Okay, this is Jake Smith. He's the promoter.
Please enjoy the music while your party is reached.
Yeah, right? I need it like that.
Hope it doesn't answer. Hello?
going? This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron, and Tony the Tornado is here with us too.
Hey, how are you?
Music.
He loves your dial music, by the way.
I'm sorry?
He loves your ringtone there, the rock.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah.
Pump you up a lot,
get you fired up.
I just said to Rich, I said, Rich, I said this one a few times. I hope our guy doesn't answer the phone so I can jam at the Eye of the Tiger some more.
Yeah, it makes you want to go run around the block a little bit.
It does. It is. I mean, lucky no one's standing there. I might start swinging.
Yeah, watch out.
So tell us a little bit about this Cage Time League. How'd you get started, and what's it all about? We're going to get the other guys on in a couple seconds here. Just trying to locate them.
I've just been hearing about the buzz about mixed martial arts and how popular it is and how the fighters are, you know, so good at it and you know, and the demand for it for the public. So I thought for sure I had to get into it, and I have a lot of boxers that I'm converting over to the mixed martial arts that wrestled and had that style that they really enjoy, but for the public.
Right.
And like for example, Jesse Nicklow, the solid fighter he was an aggressive fighter that just keeps coming and coming and coming and throws a lot of punches, and he was a good wrestler in high school, so we decided to get into the mixed martial arts. And now it's a little bit of a demand. Well, it's a big demand for it right now. And that's where it is right now.
And you were in boxing before that?
Yeah, I've been promoting boxing for most of my life. Well, I was a fighter myself, and I've been promoting boxing for professional level for 6 years. Did amateur fights. I've been doing it for about 15 years altogether with the amateur fights and the professional. Promoting, that is. I'm a little older now, so I've been promoting since I was a kid.
A lot of people don't know how much hard work that is, putting the fight card together and really getting the wheels running on it. You know, tell us a little bit about that.
I'm doing shows in Ocean City, Maryland, which I live in Baltimore, Maryland, so I'm back and forth pretty much every day driving. It's 2.5-hour drive, so I'm back and forth every day. Every other day, I'll come to Ocean City for one day, and I'll go back to Baltimore. And I have a pro boxing show August 28th in Baltimore, so I'm in Ocean City for just this July 31st show. So I'm trying to promote both at the same time. It's a little hectic, but you gotta love it. You gotta love the sport, both sports.
And if you put together like a successful card, and you know, you see some of these young guys on the rise, guys, you know. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, you don't just step into a world title shot on, you know, pay-per-view, and you're not fighting a guy like Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao. You got to start somewhere. What is it like when you see these young guys, you know, they're starting out, they're busting their asses. I mean, a lot of them are working full-time jobs. And just to see that little success that they're having. And a lot of times with these local shows, all their friends or their families there. And, I mean, what's it like seeing a guy, you know, perform at that young level in front of his hometown?
Oh, it's awesome. It's nothing like it because you hear the crowd cheering and roaring every time this man lands a punch. But the, oh, wow, ooh, the whole, you know, all the way through the fight. It's exciting. It's really exciting, especially on the local level. I mean, when you go to a big fight and, you know, you got your fans, you know, like the Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's got his supporters and Manny Pacquiao, he's got his supporters. But when you're on a local level, it's something else, especially when a kid can bring a whole house, you know, like show up at an arena. And then that's, I mean, just the energy when you're walking into that room, the excitement, it's really something else. I love it. I mean, I would love to go to a huge, successful promoter one day, which, you know, I'm working at it, and I think things are rolling the right way, the right direction. You got to pay a price in everything you do. But I tell you what, it's nothing better than doing a little local show when you have a whole bunch of fans and they come out and support their local heroes.
Now tell us a little bit about your other guest that you set us up with, Kevin Killian. Is he still all set to go?
Yeah, Kevin Killian's all set. He's in Maryland. This will be the first international fight. He's fighting a kid from Canada. So that's a big deal. I mean, they're, you know, we've got a Canadian versus a USA, and
I'm hoping everybody in that crowd's going to be chanting USA that night. Like, that will be exciting, hearing that, the roar, USA, USA through the crowd. That's going to be something else.
Yeah, definitely. We have a pretty big followership in Canada.
Yeah, that's what you were telling me earlier. Also, Kevin Killian has fought international before in mixed martial arts and judo.
Yeah, for some reason, I just heard something about Facebook getting to, like, so many billion users the other day. It's unbelievable. But there's a lot of people in Canada in the mixed martial arts business that are on Facebook, and they use it like you wouldn't believe to promote stuff. I've noticed it's just, you know, it's like every other day I'm getting a new Canadian league. I mean, there's a team with the same last name that I have up there, because I guess it's a French-Canadian name. And there's Team Bergeron up there, so it's kind of funny that they're friends with me on Facebook. And just a lot of people up there. And actually, there's a guy that ran for mayor in Montreal with the same exact name, Richard Bergeron. So that's even more weird. But
well, there you go. When you get done doing radio, you can go there and run for a political position.
Yeah, well, I can pretend I'm related to him. Maybe get some favors.
Yeah, there you go. Give him a call. Tell him what's going on.
Yeah.
Get him on the radio.
He's pretty controversial. He's always in the news or something, you know. So he's still in the political scene, but he didn't win the mayoral race. The politics is kind of weird up there. But anyway, we're going to bring on our other guests here, Jesse Nicklo and Kevin Killian.
Okay, great. Yeah, I want to hear their debates on how... If you can, help.
Oh, he's busy.
Is everybody good?
Hello?
Jesse.
What are you doing? Rich.
Hey.
What's up, bud?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich, and we got Tony the Tornado on the line, and we also have Jake Smith.
What's up, Jesse?
What's up, Jake?
What's up, man?
So tell us, Jake, what would possess you to go out the confines of the squared circle ring and go into the cage and fight MMA?
Jesse?
Yeah, I can hear you.
He just asked you. Did you hear him?
I'm sorry, I thought he was talking to you.
you did say my name. I've never been in the squared circle yet. I mean, no, excuse me, the squared cage yet, except for just to hold Jesse's hand up that one night. But Jesse, tell him how you feel, man.
Are you talking in regards to in the cage or in the ring? You know what the differences are?
Right.
All right, I just thought the only difference is, like, the wrestling aspect of it, you know what I mean? Other than that, it's pretty much all the same. I'm just going to try to keep it on my feet, and if it goes to the ground, it goes to the ground, and I'll get back up.
Now, you've had quite a bit of fights in boxing. Do you still plan on going back and forth, or are you committed to just staying in MMA now?
I'd like to go back and forth, you know, whatever my body will let me do. You know, I plan on fighting in August after this fight. And
Yes. Jesse's the main event on this mixed martial arts show I'm having in Ocean City, which is July 31st, and he's the main event August 28th in Baltimore, Maryland for a pro boxing show. So I don't know if anybody's ever done that before.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You're going to be like the Bo Jackson of combat sports, or what?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, whatever wants to pay my mortgage.
As long as he doesn't, it stays injury free like Bo Jackson didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
So, actually, what was the first opportunity you had to fight in MMA, and what brought it about?
Well, I've been training last year for MMA. You know, it was a rough year at boxing. I only had two boxing matches last year, and you know, I thought about looking elsewhere and getting in MMA. And I had two amateur fights scheduled, but you know, guys backed out at the weigh-ins, and you know, just. Whole bunch of controversy with that, so I was like, man, forget this, I might as well get back into boxing. I had a few boxing matches, and then Jake said something to me about competing in this MMA stuff, and I said, well, you know, if you're going to get me somebody to fight, you know, I'll do it, and, you know, I had a fight last month.
Jesse just likes to fight. It doesn't matter who what he does. I mean, boxing, mixed martial arts. Not on the street, though. He's a good kid on the street. He's a very well-behaved person. I mean, he just likes to fight. That's why when I gave him the opportunity, I said, Jesse, would you like to do mixed martial arts? Yeah, I just want to fight. So.
That's good. So,
yeah, plus, you know, doing both of them, I think, will keep me sharp. You know, if I have a boxing match here or MMA fight here, I'll be sharp for either one.
Now, we like to discuss all the time the whole boxing versus MMA debate. And by that I mean, you know, the argument that boxing is dying and MMA is taking over, and the other argument that MMA is wrestling and all that stuff. You know, it's not as interesting. And you know, there's all kinds of people that have different views about both sports. But what do you like about? What are the advantages that you see in each sport? And you know, what can you contribute to that whole debate there?
You know, I don't think either one is, you know, harder than the other. You know, I think they're, you know, pretty much at the same level. You know, in MMA, you got to watch for, you know, elbows and knees and takedowns and submissions and, you know, boxing. You know, it'll be 10, 12-round fight, and, you know, it's pretty much more condition. But, you know, I think they're both, you know, as equally as hard. And, you know, I don't like when guys, you know, start talking about, you know, MMA taking over and this and that. MMA is only taking over here, you know. Overseas, boxing is huge. You know, they can't stand MMA, but you know, everybody thinks, you know, things evolve in the United States, and they don't.
That's been one of my main points, so thank you for confirming that for me. But, you know, even south of the border in Mexico, do you think those guys watch a lot of MMA down there? I don't think I've ever read a fight in Mexico.
I don't even think they know what that is over there.
If they do have any Mexicans fighting, that's, you know, with guns, it seems like these days. So, there's no time for cages. Anyway, what got you into boxing in the first place? How did you start fighting, period?
I started boxing when I was 13. You know, I was getting a lot of trouble and stuff. And, you know, my mom told me that she was going to take me up to the gym and, he said, I've taken me up there, and, you know, it's been history ever since.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, this is Tony here. I trained, and I'm like not going to get all the way into it, like, because I've done so many thousand times before, but, I mean, I trained for years down at a South Philadelphia rec center that, you know, I saw a lot of angry kids coming off the street. Didn't have nothing else to do with their lives. Some of these kids, you know, had no adult influence, and only adult influence they had was everyone at the gym who wanted to take these kids off the street and turn them into something. It saved a lot of other people. I'm just grateful for all these guys.
Hello?
Hello?
Is this Kevin? Did we get Kevin on?
No, this is Jesse.
Oh, well, I just tried
to. You still got me and Jesse on the line.
I just tried to call him Kevin again. That's why they were ringing. It was busy the first time we tried getting him on. Sorry about interrupting. Try one more time to get him on. He doesn't want to come on.
Hello?
Kevin.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Hello?
Is this Kevin?
Yes.
Can you hear us? This is Rich from Fight News Unlimited.
How are you?
Good. We just wanted to bring you on the show tonight so we could have a three-for-all, we call it here, with guests on this Cage Time card. And it sounds like you're going against the Canadian, so it's going to be a battle of the countries?
Yeah, I say I'm fighting. I'm not master of the gym right now. I'm hopping out off the mat here. I'm fighting Anthony Craig. He's a Canadian Special Forces operative. He's a tough cat. You know, he's a big dude. He's a combat veteran. You know, he's, you know, served for the coalition in Afghanistan. You know, so the guy is he's no stranger to throwing down. You know, and he's, you know, doing the real deal combat. So he's not gonna expect him to break easy.
Yeah, you're lucky you're not fighting him with a knife or anything, right?
No, I'm glad this is bare-fisted only. So, you know, If it was guns and knives, I think he might have a distinct advantage.
Yeah, even if you had a gun and he didn't, might have an advantage. Knowing those guys' training and everything, that's unbelievable. That's good to hear, though, that there's more of that going on. I know that the mixed martial arts industry, period, tries to do a lot for the troops. And,
it is doing a lot for the troops like that.
You know, we've actually had a guest on before who had a jiu-jitsu gym on base somewhere that was pretty big. We've always been a big supporter. I went to military school myself. That's the only reason I get the box is because I went to Virginia Military Institute down in Virginia for a semester. So it's always been one of those things that I've always supported. But I just wanted to kind of give you a chance to explain yourself and talk about your background. According to Jake Smith here, you got quite an interesting background yourself as a pilot and a cowboy, you said?
Yeah, I'm a professional cowboy. I grew up on a horse farm. I attended Penn State University. I had 2 degrees, one in accounting, and the other one is in equine science. Penn State University is one of the top 10 breeder of quarter horses in the world today. And then after my time at Penn State, I actually moved out to Colorado. And it was just running running Mustangs, about 300 or so horses out there. I was breaking horses and fixing fence, and you know, I was doing the traditional cowboy thing up in the Upper Rocky Mountains. I did that for a while until I came back here to the East Coast. But so I still break and train horses. Rodeo, here in Maryland, Ocean City, Maryland, has a rodeo 7 days a week at 4 o'clock over in West Ocean City. So I go over there. Rope some steers and ride some bulls and break horses and still do my cowboy thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it tells me you buy a horse wherever you go. Is that true?
Yeah, well, not wherever, but on the weekends, my girlfriend and I would sell out my horse and we ride him out to the bar. You know, he'll wait patiently for me outside the bar, and he is an excellent DD. He's got me home safe every single time. You know, he's solid.
Can you get a DWI for riding a horse?
I actually, believe it or not, I actually researched that. In Pennsylvania, you can't. See, I grew up in Pennsylvania. We drive the bars and get schnockered all the time. And in the state of Maryland, a horse is considered a motor vehicle. I believe it's the way the laws are written. Only if it's hitched to a cart, like a wheeled vehicle, then it's considered a vehicle. But I think just being on the horse, I don't think it's considered a motor vehicle. And again, what are you doing? Pound my horse, tow him away? I'm not really concerned about getting pulled over on a horse.
Right. I'm going to get me a horse.
Good friend.
Your best friend. I met him. It was awesome meeting your horse. There's something pretty cool there.
I've always loved horses. When I lived up in New Hampshire for a little while, I met this woman up there who was like 90 pounds soaking wet, and I seen her do some Brazilian jiu-jitsu on a freaking baby horse, just trying to get the halter on it. And just amazing what people who know how to deal with horses can do. And that thing threw her all over the stall, like wall to wall, but she got that damn thing on it. And she taught me a lot about, just what little things to do to a horse to make sure that it trusts you enough. Like, she would lay down in front of it, and it would walk right over. It wouldn't step on her, you know. And she showed me how to put your fist up to the nose so that it recognized you as like a friend. Like, another horse would put its nose up to the horse just to kind of greet it. You know, so she'd show, do it with the fist. And, like doing a fist bump to a horse. They respond.
Yeah, it is like a horse fist bump.
But anyway, tell us a little bit more about your fighting background. How did you get into fighting?
I was not a bad kid in high school. You know, I was in all honors classes. You know, I was definitely academically sharp, but I never took crap off anyone. And, you know, I just never really laid down for anyone. And, you know, if somebody wanted to start problems, you know, I'd finish it. My father, you know, Reggie, if I ever start a fight, I'd have my old man to answer to. You know, it was never pick on anybody smaller than you, never start a fight. But if somebody was going to start something, it was my job to finish it. He always told me, finish it. You know, you don't let anybody shove you around. And I took that to heart. So I was in more than my share of high school fisticuffs. And eventually it came to the point where I ended up, one guy that I fought the year before wanted to fight me again, and I walked away from that fight. I said, Greg, I'm not going to fight you. I turned around, I walked away, and I felt like the bigger man for about 2 seconds, so I got punched in the back of the head. And then the fight was on. I ended up throwing Greg through a glass door. I was going to get expelled. And it kind of, we worked out a deal where, the history teacher, who's like been teaching at school for like 48 years, like that. I remember he came down and he's like, Mr. Amway is his name. He's like, in my 48 years as an educator at this school, I have never, never had any of my honor students involved in fisticuffs. I was like, I get expelled this way. I was like, congratulations, we're 1-0. I was like, what do you want? You know, he was mad at me, but eventually the school worked out a deal that I had to do some in-school suspension if I would join the wrestling team. They said, look, we got to get you focused. So I ended up joining the wrestling team. It kind of got my head on straight, and, you know, I started wrestling from there. And I did. I did win states, but, you know, I won a lot more than I ever lost. And, you know, I had a very good wrestling career. I talked to the Penn State University wrestling coaches about wrestling there. I was not getting a scholarship, but I was offered a spot on the team. They're like, you know, you got the credentials, and if you want to be on the team, you're on. I weighed my options out. At the time, I was also going to be, became an officer on the Penn State rifle team, and I was riding horses with the Penn State equestrian team. So I was very, very busy, and I thought, wrestling, I just was a little burned out. I thought, maybe it's not what I'm going to do full-time. But the Penn State wrestling coach, Hachiro Uchi, who himself was on the Japanese Olympic team, he's an absolute legend in wrestling and judo, won American AAU wrestling championships several years in a row. Just an amazing, amazing athlete and grappler. He convinced me to get on the Penn State judo team. And I never had heard of judo prior to Penn State, but it opened my eyes to everything. It made a big difference. It was an evolution in my grappling style. It really fell in love with it. And from there, I ended up, won East Coast Judo Championships a couple times. I took fourth in 2000 at Collegiate National Judo Championships. I took bronze at Nationals the following year in 2001. Became a captain of Penn State Judo team and the only undergraduate ever to get a black belt from Coach Uishi. And it was a very, very happy, successful career there. And then from that point on, I kind of transitioned over to more jiu-jitsu. I trained with Elio Gracie, the late Elio Gracie himself, the founder of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and got my blue belt from his son, Hoist Gracie. I'm now a purple belt. I received that from John Garfield in the Pedro Sauer Jiu-Jitsu system, and yeah, I continue to train and hopefully better myself from there.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us what you can't do? Like the resume of resumes right there. That's incredible.
Hey, he owns his own accounting firm. He owns his own accounting firm, so you might want to add that too if you guys need an accountant.
Yeah, Killian Certified Public Accounting, KillianCPA.com. We will tap out your taxes. So, you know, see, I actually have a lot of my accounting clients show up there. Like, my account can be a beer account. So the past few years, we've always marketed to that I'm the second toughest accountant in America after Mr. Chuck Liddell, who himself has a degree in accounting from Cal State, I believe, or Polytech. Where did Chuck Liddell go to school? But Chuck Liddell has a degree in accounting, so I've always said I'm the second toughest accountant in America. However, in light of recent events the past couple years, it may soon, not now, but it may soon be, might be time for Chuck and I to bow out of the bottle of the accountants here. I might be coming for that title. We might have to bang it out here sometime soon.
He's right for it. He's definitely right
for it. Yeah, so that's where we're going.
So, yeah, that's interesting. I actually wrote an article called The Misconceptions of MMA. And one of the misconceptions of anybody who fights, this guy's dumb, you know, he's just been hit in the head too many times, or punch drunk, you know, any fighter, everybody thinks he's stupid. There are a lot of people who are very smart people who fight.
I think you need to be smart. There's, I look at MMA and grappling in particular as nothing more than chess. So, say, my father, he was first boarder in his high school chess team. I mean, I enjoy the game of chess. And MMA and fighting, it's moves. It's sets of moves, and you don't have to wait for your opponent to make a counter move. has made this speech as many moves in as he can. And, you know, and there's different setups and different traps and different ways to checkmate your opponent. And that's all it is. This is a smart man of the game. You can't just be, you know, an idiot and go out there and think you can get so far just going out there and, you know, having a tougher chin than your opponent. I mean, there's a certain amount of heart and conditioning that goes into it. But, you know, I you realize, like, dude, I'm a tough guy. I can take a punch. I don't want to take a punch. That's the goal, is to not get hit. I mean, beyond fighting, you know, I have a very important modeling career to worry about. You know, Calvin Klein is not going to be paying me the big dollars, you know, if my face is all busted up. I mean, that really, at the end of the day, my face is my moneymaker. I'm a good-looking guy.
All right, there, Tom Cruise. Well,
I tried that too, but my belly got in the way. Hey, also, Jesse Nicklo is going to be fighting August 28th for the NABC a belt, which will get him rated in the top 20 in the world. Which, when Jesse gets rated in the top 20 in the world, he can pretty much be a real title shot. So these are some big fights that are going on, that are taking place.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, Jesse, I wanted to address one question to you, seeing as there's a big fight coming to my neck of the woods, Boston, here, involving one of the legendary boxers in modern history, James Toney, fighting Randy Couture. And he's been bringing a lot of that boxing Mayweather type hype over to MMA with his rants and putting Randy Couture's doll in a dress and saying the only freak show about this fight, you know, the only freak show is in his pants, he said. But he's had some pretty interesting comments, and he's been pretty, you know, out there. But a lot of the MMA fans just want to see him get crushed, and they just expect him to do nothing but go down. And I'm thinking that there's a little bit more to it than that. And as a guy who's done it, who's crossed over, what do you think a guy like James Toney, who's a lot older, what do you think his chances are of being able to adapt that quickly?
I don't know what his background is completely. You know, you never know if he wrestled in high school or if he attended college and wrestling. I'm sure he knows something. I mean, he wouldn't just jump into MMA and, you know, think he's going to fight Randy Couture. You know, I'd like to see James Toney win, but, you know, if he doesn't know anything else besides boxing, it's going to be slim to none. You know what I mean? I didn't just get into MMA, you know, knowing how to box. You know, I know how to wrestle. I know a little bit of jiu-jitsu. You know, I can kick a little bit. So, you got to know a little bit of everything.
Don't help for that.
Well, the thing is, too, you know, a lot of people might not realize that the idea behind the boxing hype is half the time it's to sort of impose your will on your opponent before you even fight him, you know, to get into his head. And obviously that's what Tony's trying to do with the dress thing and saying that grappling's for girls and all that kind of stuff that he's saying. But it could also be reverse psychology, you know, to make Randy think that he's not going to be doing that stuff even though he's training in it. Because there are people that are saying, oh, he tapped me out, he almost tapped me out. Ola Wall is one of the guys that he's training with. And there's a guy in Randy Couture's camp that's trying to mimic Toney, but you know, he's a big guy. I don't think there's anybody that can really mimic him either. With more than 70 wins he's got.
Randy Couture's on that level. You know what I mean? He's, you know, a top athlete. You know, won the heavyweight championship of the world. So I don't think anything James Toney says or does is going to affect, you know, how Randy Couture is going to go into this fight. You know, Randy Couture is not going to stand with him. You know, why would he? You know, he's going to immediately try to take him down. And once he takes him down, he's going to try to pose his will on him. But, you know, we'll see how the fight goes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see a guy who's been a lifelong boxer try to throw knees and elbows if he does. I always joke with Toney about the whole boxing versus MMA debate crossover. And when Toney says stuff like, oh, well, you can't knee in boxing, I said, bullshit, you know, you can knee and get a point taken away, you can still knee.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a rule, do whatever you want.
You can
do it. Disqualified.
Well, I bet sometimes guys get
As I've said once, and I'll say it again, I think this is the worst kind of style for James Toney that he has, a boxing style. And I said it last week, when you put a guy in a mixed martial arts fight, guys that I could see doing very well were guys maybe like Mike Tyson or even guys maybe like Joe Frazier, guys that were, you know, very fast, but also devastating punches that would hit you so fast. You see, if you look at a lot of the guys that use stand-up game in MMA, a lot of them, when they're on their feet, will fight from a distance. Case in point, the Lesnar fight the other week, the Lesnar-Carlin fight. When they were both standing up, they were keeping a distance, and then they were, you know, coming in and kind of charging at each other, throwing punches. James Toney's the guy that likes to fight in close. He was the guy, all throughout his boxing career, he would kind of lay on the guy and try to get little shots on the inside, or he would roll his shoulders when the guy would punch and counter. In MMA, that's not going to work. If you let a guy get in that close to you, he's not going to go for a punch. He's going to go for a takedown, a chokehold, or an armbar. And I don't think James is going to be able to defend that. I like James Toney. I've been watching him for almost 20 years now. And, I mean, he's got a funny attitude. And, I mean, he's a good guy at selling tickets because he talks so much shit. But the problem is his style, that defensive counter-punching style, is not going to work in a cage fight.
I don't think it's as much as him as a counterpuncher. I just think that James Toney in general is a lazy fighter.
Especially as he's gotten older and he's gotten heavier. When he was at 160 to 175 pounds, he was very good. He always was traditionally a counterpuncher. He would let the guy punch and then he would fire off with the counter uppercuts and right left hooks. Now he does very little of anything. I mean, he's still technically a counterpuncher. He just counters less.
You two guys are the guys that are the boxing authority, and you guys are taking couture. It's funny. I'm actually going to defend James Toney on this. That if you guys remember the Ray Mercer Tim Sylvia fight, which lasted all of 8 seconds. You know, anybody with a good punch can stop anyone else. Ray Mercer should have been destroyed in that fight. I mean, he got beat by Kimber Slice, who's a hack. Just a wannabe fighter. And Mercer destroyed the former UFC heavyweight champion of the world with one punch. One good punch is all you need in this sport. While my money is on couture, gotta keep that chin
that
up.
That was a little bit sketchy because I heard there was a pretty brutal press conference between Sylvia and Mercer because originally I think it was supposed to be a boxing match and Sylvia had agreed to that. So they had a press conference and it was so heated that at one point Mercer said, "I signed to have a boxing match and stand up toe-to-toe and fight with you, so that's what I'm going to do. You can do whatever you want, but that's what I'm going to do." So I don't know whether Sylvia had pretty much agreed at that point to just make it stand up or not, but obviously we didn't get a chance to find out what his strategy was to get knocked out. And if the world's strongest man couldn't do, Sylvia beat him up right in front of my eyes out in Worcester a few months ago there in May. So it is pretty impressive. And Tony's a lot bigger guy and a little bit younger than Mercer was when he went into MMA. So
the big thing with MMA is, you're wearing a 6-ounce glove. You know what I mean? It's nothing. Anybody who punches anybody can be a puncher in MMA.
Right. Look at Forrest Griffin getting knocked out by a jab.
I just got caught 5 minutes, or I guess 10 minutes ago, by one of my own students. He's walking around 165 pounds. Because of grappling, I'd light this guy up. He trained 4 years on this Russian high school boxing team. He caught me with a 3-punch combo and almost dropped me to the mat. And his 4-ounce gloves, it hurts. The smart jaw still hurts right now, And I got a black eye. So, that's just a 3-punch combo. Anybody can throw good heavy leather.
Yeah. Yeah, it's but it's kind of funny to me. The one thing that jumps out at me all the time is when people talk about this whole boxing versus MMA thing, it gets harped on more than if, say, somebody comes in with just primarily a judo background or a karate background or, wrestling or one other discipline that he's focused on but doesn't have everything else. They don't make fun of that guy. They don't discount him, but it's like every time a boxer tries to come in, they say, "Well, a boxer can't compete in MMA." And it's part of that whole. It's like a clash of titans deal, I think, because MMA is getting stronger and more popular, and boxing still wants to be that big kid on the block in a lot of ways. But and clash, and people argue over it. But I think, in general, both sports could learn a lot from each other in a lot of ways.
Well, I think what you're missing is the evolution of MMA. You know, if you watched, you know, the first, you know, five UFC events, before every fight, they would say, this event is karate versus boxing, or wrestling versus taekwondo, judo versus capoeira, and they would announce everybody had their style, and fighters fought only with their style. The karate guys fought in traditional karate stances. And now, yes, you know, I like personally fight with a more judo jiu-jitsu influence in my style, we're still all doing MMA. You know, and anybody who tries to come out there with just one, unless you're somebody like Damian Maia, who is just a legend and just that amazing in jiu-jitsu, most guys have pretty much the same style as anybody else. And it's the MMA style. And if you're not like, if you're not well-rounded, more than likely you're not going to get too far. And it's,
that's the thing, too, that makes me think that Tony has a chance, because I'm not saying Randy Couture isn't good anymore, but he's one of those type of guys that comes from sort of that older generation, and his moves are more basic, and even though he's a coach and a trainer and works with a whole bunch of different people to adapt his game all the time just like anybody else, it seems to me like a lot of these older guys who have been at it too long are just too stale to deal with these younger up-and-coming guys. Not that Tony is one of those guys, but, you know, I feel like Randy's in a different category now because the game has changed so much. And he's actually one of those guys that does embrace boxing in a lot of his fights. He likes to do the dirty boxing. Case in point would be the Gabriel Gonzaga fight. One of his best recent victories, I think.
Yeah, but Randy Couture is not a dumb fighter. You know, he's not going to go out there and stand with James Toney. James Toney's
a world
champion. You know, I mean, you don't have no choice. He's going to go out there and he's going to try to take him down. And I mean, I don't blame him. That's what I would do if I was fighting James Toney. Go out there and take him down. What you going to do then?
Well, he could always smother him with his weight. I'm sure he's planning to try that.
Yeah, I might try to lay on him.
Who knows? He might grease his fat ass up like GSP is doing.
I just hope that he doesn't step in the ring, you know, in the cage, looking like he has in his past few boxing matches, because it's just going to be a different story. You know, you can't rest when you're in a cage. You know, you're going at it for, you know, 3-5 minute rounds, and, you know, balls to the wall.
Right.
That 4th and 5th minute is a lot more drastic than the 1st and 2nd minute.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's 3 rounds of boxing, but, yeah, there's just 3 minutes of box rounds. There's 5 minute MMA rounds. It's just that last couple of minutes where you're really feeling that burn, and you're going to have that cardio up to snuff.
Right, and the thing that I hear a lot, especially with the comparisons to Kimbo and the world's strongest man there, Pugachevsky, when they tried to go over to MMA, one thing that happened to them was the lactic acid, because they're so muscular, just locked up their joints and their muscles so that they couldn't throw good after a while. You know, once that MMA guy starts pushing you to the limit, you can't pick him up because he's too heavy and he knows how to sprawl. And you exhaust your energy trying to grapple just so you can land a punch, then you get to the point where you finally do get in the position where you throw a punch, you got nothing. Your arms are dead, you know? And I used to think, well, these guys have weak boxing. They haven't trained, you know, when I first started noticing this on a local level in fights. But now I understand, because I've seen the bigger guys have that problem. And somebody...
Look for that to be a factor in my fight next Saturday. I said Anthony Craig, my opponent, is a monster of a man. I mean, he's big. He just competed in his strongman competition last month, the sort of the famous guy. I mean, an absolute beast. But, you know, he's going to give me hell for the first 60 seconds, I'm sure. But, if for some reason I'm not able to, you know, tap him out, you know, on the first round, which I find to be unlikely, but if this does get beyond the first round, I expect the lactic acid and, you know, conditioning to definitely be called into question.
But it's weird because some people, like Brock Lesnar, has so much wrestling experience and flexibility from doing training the right way. And obviously, you know, he drank his milk growing up on a dairy farm. It's a different story with him for some reason, because I think he has that collegiate and high school wrestling behind him, so he's just used to having the flexibility with the muscles. So for some people, they can get away with having all that extra muscle mass. But other people that aren't, you know, seasoned veterans in the sport or something like it, they just they have a lot of different training that they have to do to get to that point where their muscles are not only functional but flexible. It seems like, you know, especially with Puchinowski, it had been long enough since when he actually used to compete that some of his muscles had already turned into fat, you know, so he had that problem to deal with too. It wasn't as big as he used to be when he was on the World's Strongest Man circuit. But apparently, you know, now he's going to try to fight Butterbean, so I don't know what that's going to be like. Puchinowski versus Butterbean. Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah. But we still aren't sure if that is even, you know, that's even the plan. I guess Butterbean went out on the line and said that Puchinowski sucks as a fighter and he shouldn't be fighting, you know, anybody significant. So then Puchinowski's people came back and said, well, what is this, a publicity stunt or does he really want to fight? So it's all kind of jaw-jacking right now. But it sounds like since Butterbean promotes this league that they're both in, that it's all orchestrated. So that might be the next fight, which is kind of an interesting matchup, you know. We'll see how much butter has left. But that's another guy who just shows you can have a puncher's chance at any fight. He's had plenty of MMA fights where you wouldn't think he could win just looking at him. But
I think Butterbean's proven what he might lack in talent conditioning, he has in heart. I don't think there's anybody that Butterbean wouldn't fight. He'll take any fight anywhere. That I think he's proven that for himself.
Yeah, we had him on as a guest a few months ago too. He's a pretty nice character. But anyway, guys, we're running late here on the interview, and it's been a pleasure talking to you all. Is there anybody you all want to give a shout out to or thank or say hi to out there? Any final thoughts?
I had to thank my sponsors, Loaded Gun Customs, custom motorcycles and hot rods. Gold's Gym. We've been training here for 13 wonderful years. Wild Bill Saloon in Ocean City, Maryland, Legion Security, Great Scott Broadcasting in 93.5 The Beach, and of course, Killian Certified Public Accounting. If you're KillianCPA.com, we will tap out your taxes.
All right.
I guess I'd like to give Ferocity MMA a shout out, you know, Coach Doors and JJ and Diamond Detail and Baltimore Boxing and, you know, everybody helped me get to where I'm at right now. You know, just I really appreciate everything, and you know, thank my promoter Jake Smith for you know putting on these good events, and you know, I'd like to thank you for having me on the show.
All right, thank you for stopping by, Jake. You got any final thoughts? We're still with us, Jake. Did we lose you? I lost Jake. He just probably said, "Let my fighters do the talking. I'm out." All right. Well, it's been great having you guys on, and we'll definitely keep in the loop with Jake and keep promoting you guys whenever you got an event coming up, and I wish you the best of luck, Jesse, in both boxing and MMA, of course, and Kevin, of course, in everything with the horses, the accounting, and whatever else you got on your resume.
Whatever else you want to conquer. He's got it all going on, doesn't he?
The most interesting man in the world commercials and put you on there.
You know what? It's funny. Actually, I posted that on my Facebook this morning. When I was young, I wanted to be the Marlboro man, but now I realize I need to be the new Dos Equis man. That is my goal in life.
I think you can have a sponsorship with them. You could be the most interesting young man in the world. How about that?
Yeah.
It could be a whole new campaign for them. Just start writing letters now. All right, guys. Have a good night, and thanks a lot. It was probably one of our better interviews, especially considering, you know, the amount of people we had on the call. So, great job.
Thanks for having us in.
You're welcome.
All right. Good luck, guys. See you later.
See you.
All right. So, that was Jesse Nicklo and Kevin Killian. And also Jake Smith was on the line with us. And we're overdue for our next guest, so I'm just going to rustle up his number here and give Tarvis a call. Tarvis Simmons, who I got on the phone with today briefly, and he was about to spar, so hopefully he did well. He doesn't have a headache right now.
Yeah. This is Tarvis, right?
Tarvis. This is Marvelous Tarvis. That's how you remember his name.
Marvelous Tarvis?
Marvelous Tarvis and Tremendous Travis.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, that should be good.
Tremendous Travis and Marvelous Tarvis. Okay, makes sense. Figure that out. South Paul.
Yeah, I wonder if their parents planned that. Or they came up with that.
Come on. So, did you give me a South Paul?
No, I should name them like that. Their nicknames. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, he'd be the former sparring partner of mine.
Oh, really?
He'd be like Tucker Bear right now.
All right. There's Tarvis. On the ringer. See if he comes through this week.
Hello?
Tarvis. Marvelous,
yes.
Tarvis. How's it going?
Good, good, thank you.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich, and we got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line here with us as well.
Okay.
What's up?
Not much. Just got home not too long ago. Was in the gym training.
How'd you do today in sparring?
Oh, I did well, man. you know, I feel great, you know, getting sharp, you know, getting my timing down and, you know, just trying to be ready for, you know, whatever comes along.
All right. And do you have a fight coming up that you know of or just getting back into training shape? What's the story on that?
Well, I spoke with my promoter, Joe DeGordia, Saul Boxing. He had mentioned two dates to me, one being July 30th, and the other is August 7th, which is a week later. So, you know, I just want to be in tip-top condition, left. You know, I definitely want to be ready so I can get a good show.
All right. And what weight are you pretty much committed to staying at this point?
I campaign at middleweight, which is 160 pounds, and I am willing and able to go up 168 to fight those guys if I can't get the fight at 160.
All
right. Yeah, because I'm looking at your record now, and I see like the last few fights you fought a little bit high, because I always remember you being more around 160 and seeing you fight, you know, much bigger guys like Alan Green, Sam Hill, Carl Daniels, who was a 173 when you fought him. And I was saying you had really stepped up in weight after fighting guys like Carlos Borges and Robert Frazier when you're in the mid 140s. Do you feel like you're a little bit better when you're lighter?
Yeah, I mean, I think my advantages are much better when, you know, when I'm fighting the lighter weight classes. When I'm up there at super middleweight, you know, you got guys who are natural heavyweights who get down to 168, then they balloon back up. You know, so I'm constantly at a disadvantage at that weight class, but I'm still able to hold my own.
Yeah, I'm actually taking a look at your record right now. Back in 2003, you actually have a win over a former sparring partner of mine from Philadelphia, a guy by the name of Ron Bodie. Ron and I actually trained together in the late 90s, early 2000s, and he was such a good prospect, and it was a shame they managed his career all wrong, and he took so many fights on short notice. He really had potential to be a good fighter, and didn't pan out that way. Do you remember being in there with him? It looked like you beat him by decision.
Who's that, Ron Bodie?
Yeah, Ron Bodie.
I beat him by decision. I had wind up, what had happened, the fight wind up being actually closer than the judges thought. I had one of my trainers stretching me, and he had slipped on my back and actually put all his weight, you know, and which sent me forward, you know, as I was stretched on the floor, and actually pulled my groin area and my hammy. So I was fighting him with that injury. I didn't want to let them know that. Because I needed to fight, I wanted to fight that bad, and you know, so but the fight wind up being a close fight, you know. So, you know, all in all, he still, you know, he put up a great effort, you know. Thank God, I was able to pull it out, but I did what I had to do, and that's what champions do. We
yeah,
fight through
exactly.
Adversity.
I went to Nationals a little bit banged up myself, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Back in the day, Tony and I were supposed to fight a boxing match. Well, not supposed to.
Oh, yeah?
We almost got to fight each other because we were on the same national circuit. When
right.
We went to the national championships in collegiate boxing, so.
All right.
That's
yeah, same weight class, but different brackets. If there was one fight difference, and they would have put me in the other bracket, we would have met up in the second round. But, hey, things didn't work out that way.
That's all. Who would have won?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder who would have won.
It would have been a tight one. We had some
time. It would have been the boxer against the slugger.
Yeah. I was a very defensive guy. I liked my jab. And the one big win that I had at Nationals, the judge that was on the fight came up to me after the match in the lobby of the hotel, and he said, you know, your jab is what won you that fight. You got to stick with that.
Right.
Unfortunately, I fought a guy I liked to fight on the inside, and Tony fought and beat Michael Jordan at home. This was my second fight in the tournament, you know. And he got
okay.
A pair and fight for this, you know. Whatever. I'm not giving any excuses, but Tony beat him. I lost to him at the Nationals, and he threw a lot of inside punches and uppercuts, and I tried to take it easy because I knew who I was going to have to face.
Right. I was always a short fighter. You know, I'm about 5'8". I thought like kind of like the Marciano style, kind of short, kind of rugged. Inside, waiting in punches. I ended up drawing a guy in the first round that was 6'7".
Oh, wow.
That a little height and reach disadvantage. And but he ended up being a 3-time champ. But like I said, I was a Philadelphia guy. I'm a Philly guy, you know, product of the gym wars, loved it. Like I said, Ron Bodie and I trained out of the same gym. We sparred several times. I mean, he was a quick, flashy, you know, good hands, good foot movement. It's a shame and I think a lot of it was he was mismanaged. And I know he had later in his career problems with his weight. I remember being in the gym for a long time. He's like, yeah, I'm fighting this weekend. And it was like Tuesday. I'm like, oh, what are you going to weigh in at, Ron? He's like, yeah, I got to be in this fight like 172. And I'm like, oh, okay, what are you stepping on? He was like, 167. I'm like, oh, what are you weighing in at today? He's like, about 183.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, Ron, you're going to... I mean, because I knew I did that. I mean, I went from 180 to 165 in 3 days, and I said, I had nothing for the fight. I said, Ron, you're going to kill yourself. And next thing I know, he's out there, you know, he's like, you know, drinking the soda, and he's eating like a cheeseburger. I'm like, Ron, come on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that kind of happened to me. You know, I wind up when I fought Carlos Bjorkas, I dropped 11 pounds overnight, and I was really weak, you know, for that fight. You know, in fact, I had gotten so weak, you know, I wind up catching a cold, and I wind up taking medication, you know, to clear my sinus and everything, and it just made me like real woozy. So. I went, you know, thank God I got through that fight, and, you know, again, I won that fight on sheer experience alone.
Yeah, I mean, this is a funny one that I got. It was two fighters that Rich and I have as common opponents. One guy he beat, and one guy that I actually split with. And Rich has, I think, Rich, did you lose to Jesse Bond?
Did lose to Jesse Bond, but it was a...
I know you get pissed off when I bring that up, too.
That's a fouling contest, and he won.
yeah, he was a fouling king. Well, I fought a guy out in Reno a week before, this kid named Brian Kerr, whose head was made out of pure
brick, and I hit him so hard that actually my toes went numb, and he shook it off like nothing. Then I hit him, and I went to the corner after the first round, and I said, guys, my left is gone. It feels like it's like I can feel the heartbeat in my glove. I hit him with the right hand. He buckled again and shook it off, and I went back to the corner and said, guys, my right hand is gone. And my hands were telling me I couldn't throw a punch in the third round. I ended up, and I thought I still won, but it was his home gym. He was a good story kid and whatever. He gets the win. So the next week, I'm pissed off. I'm like, I want to fight again. And I don't care who I'm fighting. So they throw me in with this kid, Jesse Bond, who was, you know, he was a sloppy fighter. He was a southpaw. He clinched a lot, and he was kind of dirty, and he was just an awkward guy in there. Just aside from me, if you're being a southpaw, you would know. Aside from being a southpaw, you know, it can be kind of, you know, iffy in there. And I said, I don't have good enough hands right now to beat this guy. I'm going to beat him with my brain. And that's what I, you know, I used his awkwardness against him. And just, I mean, the punch didn't break an egg, but I couldn't put any muscle behind him.
That's what you're supposed to use, to, you know, use his strength against him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the reason why I'm asking for the Sergio Martinez, the Kelly Pavlik, and, you know what I mean, because I know that I got what it takes, to, you know what I mean, to compete and beat these guys. You know, I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, I'm not getting my break, but, you know, sooner or later, they got it. They got to give me my break. I think I deserve one, you know, in taking the Allen Green fight on Friday's notice. When they called me for that fight, it was on a Wednesday night. I was 178 pounds. You know, I had to lose, you know, that 10 pounds, and, you know, it was tough, you know. With 5 days' notice, I didn't have much time to prepare when this guy, you know, stating that he was in camp for 10 weeks. And, you know, watching the interview, he stated that I'm not on his level. You know, I may try to survive, but, you know, I wouldn't be able to, you know, understand his onslaught. I don't think, you know, he showed anything in that fight. I thought, you know, after watching that fight, you know, that I won the fight, whether it was a good decision or – but I definitely won that fight at least by three rounds. With what fight the judges are looking at, I don't know. And how the hell in the world are they going to have two twin brothers judging my fight? Right.
That's amazing.
You know, Gary Ritter and Gerald Ritter.
You get one, you get to the other one, right?
Yeah, well, I never seen that, you know, ever, you know, and, you know, but, you know, I got an argument there, but, you know, hey, it was a learning lesson, you know, keep my ass in shape at all times, you know, and don't give these guys, you know, the opportunity, you know, that was definitely an opportunity for me to shine and you know, and beat Allen Green. In fact, you know, like I said, had I even had 2 to 3 weeks of training camp, you know, I would have stopped Allen Green. I definitely would have knocked him out. I had no snap on my punch.
Do you think the Chase is ever getting a rematch?
Well, I am, you know, asking for one, and, you know, I have asked for one. It's obvious, you know, they don't want anything to do with me. They didn't want nothing to do with me, you know, to begin with. But, you know, I got what it takes to beat any of those guys out there. And, you know, basically I just need my promoter, Joe DeGore, to get on board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, offer me fights, you know, with 6 to 8 week notice, so I can have a camp. And instead of offering me fights on other promoters' cards at last minute notice, I need him to be, you know, on board with us so that, you know, we can move forward. If I'm trying to go one way and there he has another option, he wants to go another way, it's just not going to work. You know, but I ask is just to be treated fairly and give me, you know, what the fight deserves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the only way I'm going to get up for the fight.
Right.
Give me what I
can. I was going to say, I got a question for you. You know, you being a twin, how hard is it to differentiate between you and your brother?
How hard is it to differentiate the two?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a lot. Naturally, I'm just a lot bigger than Travis. If you see it side by side, you know, I'm a little taller, you know, I'm a little wider, my head is rounder. So, I mean, those are things that, you know, people, you know, who know us, they pick up on.
And the reason I was asking that, I don't know if you had heard about this, but figuring being a twin, it would be always something funny to mention. There was a couple of players out of Philadelphia, One's fighting pro now, Rock Allen. He's under Golden Boy Promotions. He was an Olympian back in 04, I believe. And I've known the Allen through Nadeem Richardson's sons, Bernard Hopkins trainer, and trained Jimmy Mosley. And
yeah, I know them very well.
What?
Yeah, I know them very well.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard about the incident when they were in the amateurs, when I believe Rock, who was the lighter brother, the smaller one, tried to weigh in for his brother.
And Tiger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you and your brother never tried that, did you?
No, I mean, we never had to. I mean, we constantly stayed in shape. We were fighting a lot, whether it's here in Connecticut or in New York, so... we constantly stay busy, and we didn't have to. I mean, you know, we were younger, our metabolism was much faster, so I mean, we definitely stayed in shape, and always around our weight.
Any of you guys ever work with our good buddy out there in Connecticut, John Scully?
No, I have not. I've never worked with John. Would have loved to. We've worked with everyone else around John. You know. From Hartford, and unfortunately, no, we never worked with John.
I couldn't believe it the other day, a while ago, when we were talking back and forth on Facebook, he started talking about how we had him on an interview a little while back, and he started talking about how he still spars with his fighters.
Right.
Instead of just getting in there with the mitts, he actually spars with his own fighters to this day.
Yeah. I don't think John goes all out with them, but... You know, I mean,
that's good too,
because he gains his fighters' respect too at the same time.
Uh-huh. And one of the biggest lessons that I got about sort of your namesake, since you call yourself Marvelous there, Marvelous Marvin Hagler came through up here in Brockton, which is one town away from where I live right here.
Okay.
In Massachusetts. And I met a lot of people that worked with him and trained with him, and met Goody Petronelli. And Tony Petronelli Jr., who actually fought himself as a welterweight and had a pretty impressive record. But the point being, Marvelous Marvin, when he was being trained, Goody was running right down the beach with him. And he used to run with actually like combat boots on. I've seen pictures of him in video. And,
right.
You know, it's something that you don't see. It's like, you know, our generation, you see, it's like you think of the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out game for Nintendo with the fat guy on the bike coming behind.
I think it's imperative that, you know, a trainer, you know, if he's you know, well enough, you know, to do those things, I think it's imperative that a trainer, you know, does certain things like that with their fighter, you know, because like I said, it gives you a different level of respect, you know, from that fighter. And, you know, that's what makes fighters sometimes, you know, dig deep. Mm-hmm. And they pull those fights out because, you know, again, they want to go that extra mile because they know, you know, that and they have confidence in the team that they're with.
That's a good point. Now, looking forward, what's your ultimate goal with the time that you got left? I know you're getting a little bit old, but it's kind of an oxymoron to call people old now in boxing because everybody's coming back in their 30s to fight again, it seems, a lot of these older guys.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, man, you know, age is nothing but a number. It's about how you take care of yourself, and, you know, Bernard Hopkins proved that, you know what I mean, and many other fights. Sugar Shane proved that. You know, here Margarito's in his prime, and Sugar Shane in his late 30s, and put it on him. So, you know, I think some people, you know, use that, you know, 30, say, 38, 39 is old. I think we're in our prime, to be honest with you. And, I mean, you're just a much smarter fighter, a much wiser fighter.
Right.
You know? And, you know, I just think, you know, definitely, you know, the fans, I don't think it's necessarily fans, but the promoters, the boxing media, I think they just need to get off of that topic as far as, you know, when you're 30, that you're old. You know, look at me, my last couple fights, all the guys I've been fighting other than...
Johnson putting it on in his 40s, you know?
You know what I mean? But like I said, you know, the only one I didn't fight that was in their 20s was Carl Daniels.
Yep.
You know, but everyone else been in their mid, you know, early to mid 20s, and you know, and I got them out of there. And but to answer your question, my goals, like I said, is to if I can get the fight with Kelly Pavlik or Sergio Martinez, that's my goal. You know, make a name for myself and become a world champion.
Mm-hmm. And what is he like about fighting Pavlik? I mean, he's kind of not as wildly popular as he used to be. So I'm kind of curious why would you want to fight him at this point?
Well,
he made a lot of money. Yeah.
Even when he was champion, I was asking for that fight. You know what I mean? So Cameron Duncan, if you're listening, I want that fight. I've been asking for that fight. You know, I still think Kelly Pavlik is, you know, one of the better fighters at middleweight, and most certainly, you know, one of the better fighters in the world today. You know, yeah, he lost to Sergio Martinez. You know, styles make fights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know. I still have a lot of respect. I think Kelly still carries a good name in boxing. So, you know, by you know, all maybe that's, like I said, Kelly's still a good fighter, man. So, I think, you know, I would definitely like to get in there mixed up with him. If not, I would like to get in there mixed up with Sergio Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Or Phillip Sperm, you know. I'm willing to fight any of those guys, man.
Cool.
I'm not hiding. I'm not ducking. I'm not running. You know, I'm here, and, you know what I mean, I want to bring it out with all, you know, any of the top guys, man, in the top 10.
And what do you enjoy most about the sport?
Well, you know, it's just my passion for the sport. You know, this is just part of my life, and, you know, I love competing against the best. I want the opportunity to do that. I know I have all the skills in the world, to compete with these guys. You know, like I said, when I was training with Marshall Kaufman down there in Philly, you know, we would go over as far with Bernard Hopkins over in Upper Darby, up in Pennsylvania. Bernard loved the work so much, he invited me out to his camp in Miami. You know, sent everyone home. I stayed there grinding it out with him. You know, we're doing 10 3-minute rounds with 15-second recovery. And, you know, like I said, you know, They were testing me, testing my will. They probably thought I was crap. But, you know, I stayed in there, and, you know what I mean, and we banged it out. And, you know, it made me a much better fighter, much wiser fighter. You know, I learned a lot, you know, from being, in camp with him and how to conduct myself as a professional.
Cool.
You know, in and out of the ring. And, I take that with me. And, you know, this is the reason why, you know, I feel so confident in fighting and beating anyone in the world. That's the reason why I took the Allen Green fight on short notice, because I know my worth. I know where I belong. And I hope I prove to the world, taking a fight on short notice like that with one of the most feared fighters at super middleweight, taking a fight like that on short notice. I already knew I was coming to that fight, at a disadvantage with height and reach and everything, but I still took it, you know what I mean, because that's how much I believe in myself.
Right. Now, even though you don't consider that a loss, you know, spiritually and all that, what was that like to kind of have to give up your undefeated record like that? I mean, was that is that kind of hard for you, or you just kind of step over it and move on? What was that like?
It's flexible to be on, because, you know, I wasn't at my best. If I was at my best and he beat me, I would just have to take my hat off and say, you know, hey, you kicked my ass. But, you know, you got to care. You know, it was in his hometown on Showtime Network, which, you know, he's a Showtime fighter. They promoted card. So, you know, the deck was stacked against me. You know, I still went in his hometown on his promoter card, on his network, kicked his ass. And, you know what I mean, I didn't get the decision. But, you know what, the fan, you can't fool the fans. The fans seen what they saw. And, you know what I mean, like I said, the fight was much closer than the judges had it. I think one of the judges even, like, only gave me one round. You know, but I definitely won some of those rounds when I was the orthodox. And I definitely won the rounds when I went softball. You know, I got a world-rated fight. I believe he was rated number 4 at the time in one of the boxing organizations. I had him questioning, he went softball, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Come
yeah,
on.
It's funny. I mean, to me, it reminds me of when I was a kid and I had my first big street fight. And there was this kid in the neighborhood who was just badass. You know, I got caught with a freaking Rambo survival knife that he gave me one time. My dad was a cop, so he's like, you're not hanging out with this kid anymore. This is in the elementary school. So anyway, you know, I ended up fighting this kid a few times. And every time I had him by surprise, if it was just in the moment, boom, we slugged it out on the street. If I turned around when he was chasing me and just leveled him, boom, I'd win the fight, you know. And we had three big fights. And actually, no, four. Well, it was one in the schoolyard where I got him good in the eye. And that led to him challenging me to a fight in my yard in front of my dad. And he took karate and all kinds of shit. And it was like my longest fight ever. I literally fought for over an hour with this kid. And finally, he kicked me in the ribs enough times where I just didn't even have enough gas to continue. So I let it go. And then I fought him again out in the middle of the street. And I fought him that one time where he was chasing me, and I turned around and leveled him. But out in the street, I got him in a headlock. And that became, like, my best street fighting move ever. It was the headlock. I guess they call it a guillotine now, but it's about tapped out. Elbow and the back at the same time. But it's kind of funny how that happens. Like, you can only beat somebody by surprise like that, you know, where you were able to prove your mettle in a lot of ways, and you have nothing to be ashamed of because of that. And it doesn't become an excuse. It becomes a reason why things happen. You know, everything happens for a reason. Something I believe in, and you know, maybe that was just to show you that you might have to take the political loss, but you know, in a lot of ways, you have so much to be proud of for being able to do that on such short notice and being able to do that adjustment. Because so few people are.
Well, I'm definitely proud of that. But in hindsight, you know, I didn't think that you know, I would be sitting, you know, 10 months later. You know, I figure, you know, a win like that would at least give me some opportunities, you know, get me more fights. And, you know, here it is, like I said, 10 months later, you know, and, you know, people keep asking me, well, why aren't you fighting? Well, you know what I mean? Like I said, I have a promoter who's putting on shows, and, you know, I'm not included. You know, like I said, I'm willing, able, you know, to fight anyone, you know, from 160 to 168. And, you know, I just don't know why I'm not getting those opportunities, but, you know, I just want you know, all the fight fans to know that, you know, they haven't seen the best of me. I'm just hoping that, you know, I get my opportunity to show the world, you know, what I'm capable of doing. You know, I love this sport, man. I mean, this the only business I know where you can change your tax bracket with a left hook.
You should patent that phrase and put it on both.
Yeah. You know, so I just want to, you know what I mean, like I said, I'm just, you know, staying on the grind, you know, staying hungry, staying humble. You know, right now I'm just eating my humble piece of pie, man, and, you know, just waiting for my opportunity, you know, so.
Tell us a little bit about how you got up in the sport and how you and your brother developed into the boxers that you are. I mean, what was that like? Did you have somebody in the family that steered you toward that or a role model?
Absolutely.
Made that
you know, my father's, you know, my father, his brother's, in fact, like my twin brother and I, we're the fifth generation in our family to fight. My brother Travis being the first world champion ever.
Fifth generation or 15th?
No, fifth.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Five is a lot too. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, we don't have that much history, but you know, we got enough and like I said, fortunately my brother, you know, our plans was you know, for both of us to become world champion. In fact, you know, all the promoters in Connecticut and in the New York metropolitan area, they all had high hopes for me. So I definitely anticipated on being one of the middleweight world champions. For whatever reason, I didn't get my opportunity yet. But you know, for all the promoters that's out there, you have middleweight fighters. You want to, you know what I mean? I'm ready to get in there and miss
you. Do you guys have any kind of a rivalry as brothers, or do you get along pretty well and have no issue?
No, you know what? We're just like any other brothers. I mean, we have our, you know, we have our ups and downs, and with he and I, you know, that's why, you know, he's where he is today, and I'm, you know, I'm 25-1 today as well. You know, it's because we constantly challenge each other, and you know, he raised the bar, and it's up to me to, you know, try to catch it.
you know, that's what makes us better fighters, man. We just continue challenging each other.
That's cool. Now, did you ever fight on the same card, or do you guys spar still?
Oh, we did fight on one card as a pro when we were actually on two cards. One was in South Carolina, I think it was North Carolina, and the other card was in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Yeah, but, you know, what a blast it is. I mean, you know, I don't see why, you know, promoters wouldn't want to, you know, put us, you know, get us together, you know, on a card or you know, what have you. But, yeah, you know, I think that's...
tomorrow. We're going to make it happen.
Yeah, that would be a promoter's dream. It should be, right? You got two world-rated brothers. I mean, it's not like one of them is good, the other one's just okay. We're both world-rated fighters. You know, we've already proven that we compete at the top. And fight the best out there. So, you know, he haven't lost a step. I haven't lost a step. You know, he only has one loss. I have one loss now. But, you know, like I said, I'm still willing, able to compete against the, you know, amongst the best out there.
Right. Well, that's pretty cool. And do you have anybody you want to thank or give a shout out to before we do?
Oh, definitely. You know, I definitely want to. You know, give thanks to Matt Yano, my publicist. You know, he's been helping me out with
He doesn't talk fast enough for me.
Matt Yano.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, he's a good dude though, man. You know, like I said, he's been trying to help me out. You know, my attorney, John Hornlewer. You know what I mean? But other than that, man, like I said, I just want to start boxing to get on board with us, man, and get me these fights, man. You know, there's a lot of talent out there, you know, that I can compete against, man. Give me the fights with you know, 6 to 8 weeks notice, you know, and, you know, let's make some money. You know, that's what it's all about.
Well, just from talking to you tonight, I'm convinced now I want to write an article that, you know, puts it all out there for you of my own, you know, based
Thank
on...
Thank you. I really do appreciate that.
And call some attention to the fact that you want to fight the best, because I think that's great, you know. And I'm an old guy too, so I didn't mean it when I said that, you know, your age thing is an issue. That I think it's an issue. I just, you know, I know people talk about that sort of thing, and I'm trying to come back at my age too to amateur boxing. But you know, so I kind of feel your pain in a lot of ways and know what you're going through, but not on a pro level, of course, but. You know, when you take some time off and you try to get back into it, the hardest part is getting through those first few workouts. But then once you get through that, and it just starts to become easier and easier every day, that's your reward. And so,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the easiest thing, man, is just to stay on top of it. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, it's just one of those things, man. If you don't use it, you lose it. You know, and, you know, although I haven't been fighting, you know, I've been staying in the gym, you know, getting sparring and staying on top of my game. So, you know, like I said, if I get that call again, man, trust me, I won't, you know, let my fans down again, including myself, you know.
Well, we'll keep an eye out for you, and we'll definitely, you know, promote you as much as possible on our website. We get about 70,000 hits a day these days. July's been good to us since we switched our server over, so.
All right.
We've spent a lot of time on building the site and the traffic, and as I was just telling Tony earlier tonight, we got people from every locale all over the world coming to our site, to the point now that our biggest foreign country is Malaysia. Would you believe it? Malaysia.
Okay.
Like 6,000 hits this month already from Malaysia.
All right.
So people in Malaysia are going to know what the heck's up. Maybe you can fight there someday.
Hey, man, if they got the right paper, man, I go anywhere.
Hey, that worked. Right. Now, Charlie, before we let you go, I got one trivia question, and then I'll let you. I'm going to end the night for you, okay? I just want to see how good you are, how much you know boxing. Earlier, when you had that pretty good quote, and Rich said you should patent it, I had a book years ago. I can't find it since I moved, but I had a book that was called 1001 Great Boxing Quotes. Now, they had a bunch of quotes from the heavyweight division. Without a doubt, Muhammad Ali was the number one quotist heavyweight of all time. Would you like to take a gander of a guess who was number two? Actually beat out Mike Tyson.
Actually beat out Mike Tyson. And the pros?
Yeah, he was a pro. He wasn't a champion, but he fought for a world title.
He wasn't a world champion, but he fought for a world title.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wasn't a world champion, but he fought for the title. Shit.
I think I know. I'm talking about.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna take a wild guess. Maybe say Larry Holmes.
Oh, Larry Holmes. Actually, you were on the right though. Larry Holmes was a world champ. He lost the fight to Larry Holmes.
Yeah. No, you're right. Damn, who was it? That man, you got me.
Joe Frazier.
I met him at the Blue Horizon a couple years ago. I was sitting with him. Tex Cobb.
Oh, Tex Cobb. Oh, get out of here.
Second one, and you know, and a lot of the stuff he wrote in there, because you know he was kind of a big, kind of a brutish, kind of ruggy guy, and he was just right here. Some great stuff like, yeah, there's a difference between tennis and boxing. Tennis, you make a mistake, it's love.
Hey, well, you know what? If they had him rated number two, then you know what I mean. I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, right?
Yeah.
So.
Anyway,
I wouldn't have guessed that, though.
It's been great chatting with you, and we thank you for taking the time out, and we'll definitely
no problem.
Be getting the word out on you and who you want to fight. And who knows?
Well, thanks. I really do appreciate that. You know, I am just hoping, like I said, you know, I can give the New England...
Okay. Sorry for that, folks. We got kicked off our own show, even though we have 3 minutes left. So we'll just sign out. Sorry we couldn't get to the MMA fights tonight, upcoming fights, but just go to SureDog.com and they have those listed up there anyway.
We had too many great interviews tonight, Rich. Too many great interviews tonight.
There's a lot of character going on tonight's show, so if you missed it, you suck, you know, because you missed good stuff. you can come back and watch it. We definitely appreciate your good time, Tarvis, and best of luck to you. And you know, I know you're going to do well because you have the right attitude and talking to you.
Thank you.
Great background.
And Tarvis, I'm sure Pat will keep some form when you're right again. That way we can definitely tune in to you. Best of luck to you, and I hope you get a chance to talk to me again.
Absolutely, anytime.
All right.
Anytime.
Have
thank
a good
guys.
Rest of the night.
Enjoy your weekend.
I'll talk to you later. All right, well, we got about 30 seconds or so I'm going to log out. This is your boy, the Tornado, and till next week.
Yeah,
till next week.
Off early next week. Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You're right.
All right, we're out. We're leaving.
Later.